Good morning, everybody. I can only imagine what you're experiencing, but that's generally the case. But it is nice to see your faces. I wish I could be in the room with you, like all the rest of our Zoom friends. I wish we could all be in one big room. Oh, wait, we are in one big room together. I came back from a trip to Kojinan Temple in Oakland and got flattened by a flu. So I'm not so flattened right now, but I have a tiny bit of a fever. So I didn't want to, share that with any of you. Feeling good. When I was in Oakland, I was there to talk about a case, one of the stories of our old ancestors that happens to be quite important for us. And I will talk about that. But first, during this last few days when I was experiencing floating on the ocean of our life, floating on the ocean of experience and all the events and the news and the bodily sensations and responsibilities and requests and sounds like life, right? I was floating on that, and a story came to me from the Parinirvana Sutra, which is a very important sutra in our school. It's one of the old sutras that really informs Zen. So it's the sutra that the Buddha taught. It's a collection of the stories he taught as he was really finalizing his teachings. He knew he wouldn't live forever, and he wanted his teachings to be preserved. He wanted people to remember the things that he had realized and taught and honed over a lifetime of teaching. And one of the stories is about, he said, basically, it's like a person who is in the middle of an ocean of life and it's becalmed. So, of course, there were no motorboats in the Buddha's times. So the analogy only refers to being in a boat that can only be assisted by the wind. So in the middle of this life, in a boat, totally becalmed. So we float along in this life. And then he said, it's like that person, and suddenly the wind of practice comes up and supports us toward practice, understanding, the wisdom and compassion of the Buddha, comes behind us and moves us along. Comes from kind of like nowhere, but basically it comes and pushes us into our practice realm. So that story came to me. The Mahaparinirvana Sutra is really, really important for Zen people especially, Mahayana people especially, because in it, the Buddha says quite a lot about how to interpret his own teachings. So our Zen school is famous for being creative and responsive to the times and not rigid, not stuck on concepts, excuse me. And this earlier story, the one that I went to Kojinan to talk about, is in that camp. One of these stories, not from the Buddha, but a story about not being stuck. So the story is, let's see, it's a good story. A monk asked Zhao Zhou, "I have just entered the monastery. Please give me some guidance." Zhao Zhou said, "Have you had breakfast yet?" The monk said, "Yes, I've eaten." Zhao Zhou said, "Then go wash your bowl." Nice story. How many of you have heard that story? Good. Excellent. So this story, and how many of you have not heard this story? Even better. So that monk had never heard the story. It was the first time he heard the story. And of course, we've now been telling it for 1,000 years or so because it's so important. And this story was selected by the Shuso. We have a Shuso for our practice period coming up. It's a very important training position. And the Shuso, Reverend Ryuki, had selected this as the story to be tested on in his Shuso ceremony. So This is a story of Zhaozhou, a great teacher. I'd like to say more about Zhaozhou, and perhaps I will, because, you know, these old guys, these old girls were exemplary practitioners of the way and creative. So this story, have you eaten? There's a basic level of interpretation that shows up in most of the collections. The story was collected as one of the stories that should be contemplated in both the Book of Serenity and in the Gateless Gate. It's collected there. Like, we should consider this story. We should make poems about it and contemplate it and use it as some sort of wind in our sails, I guess. And the basic thing that people do with it generally is to say that Zhaozhou was asking if the monk had tasted enlightenment. Have you tasted it? Have you had breakfast? Have you experienced a release from clinging dualistic mind? Have you experienced something? And the monk, usually if it's a very exemplary monk, they'll give the name. But this monk still was exemplary. He said, yes, I've eaten. So I've tasted something. And then Zhaozhou said, then wash your bowls. So it's often classically suggested that Zhaozhou was telling this monk, Zhoshu was telling this monk, wash away any clinging to enlightenment. It would be very classic Zhoshu to do that, to wash away clinging to enlightenment because it will hinder you. Wash away clinging to fixed ideas of how things ought to be, wash it away so that you're open to new experiences. This is a very important koan, very important interpretation of that koan, but it has other feelings too. It can be used throughout a practice life because all sorts of little clutter can come into our practice, or little residue in our bowls, because the wind, even though the story from the Mahapari Nirvana Sutra says the wind had stalled, still the wind actually flows continuously. The wind of wisdom and compassion, the real support for our lives, is always flowing. To then have little hindrances that prohibit us from seeing it, hinder us from seeing it, hinder us from experiencing, or hinder us from expressing and demonstrating wisdom and compassion in our own way, in our own lives, this also has to be washed away, just washed away. It's not about figuring out how to do things and figuring it out perfectly. No, wash that away. Respond to this situation, respond to this situation, respond to this situation. One of the reasons that Zhoshu is dear to me, one of the many reasons, well, one thing about Zhoshu is that he lived to be 120 years old. I know a lot about Zhoshu now, it's recent knowledge because I researched him in order to prepare to go to California. And then I came back from California and laid down on the sea for a few days. He was 120 years old. He lived to 120 years old. Meaning his entire life, how many of you know Tozan Dongshan, the founder of Soto Zen in China? Okay, so the Soto, the toe of toe is Tozan. He was such an important teacher, very important in our school, great person. So this, I hope you don't mind this. I'm such a nerd about these things. Zhoshu was 28 years old. He'd been practicing in the monastery already for 10 years when Dongshan was born. He was already 28 years old. And sometime while he was at the monastery, the founder of Soto Zen came and was interviewed by his teacher. Time passed. 62 years later, Dongshan died. And then 28 years after that, Zhoshu died. He lived. He had incredible adventures. He saw so much. And his perspective and his creativity continued to grow throughout 120 years. But the real, of course, that's admirable and good fortune. Think about what he'd seen. Think about how our perspectives, as you all are experiencing, think about how our perspectives grow. We just lived through a gigantic pandemic, which seems, wasn't the anniversary of the pandemic on the shutdown on March 11th, I believe, the anniversary 4 years ago when the world shut down. We've lived through something amazing together. And now we're going on. We've all experienced many things, and our perspective changes, and the wind comes and blows us across the sea into practice. Joshu was very open to women. He had a lot of women students. There's one story that was collected in his record, quite a few stories about his interaction with women students and women on the road. This story, he was going for a walk and met a woman, and he asked her, "Where are you going?" She said, "I'm going to steal Joshu's bamboo shoots." And he said, "What will you do if you run into Joshu?" And she walked up to him and gave him a slap. I also like that story because it was preserved. It's a story, it didn't make it into a koan collection, but it was written down by his students and preserved as an interaction of Joshu at the time. And this was unusual. In that period in Tang Dynasty China, women weren't welcome at big monasteries as welcome as they were at Joshu's place. In thinking about this, these words and how we use words and how we learn how to free the words from our concepts, we have instructions from the Buddha himself about how to take his words. Reading again in the, before I go to the Parinirvana Sutra, it just came to me a memory of a great teaching Dogen Zenji refers to. It's called Sayandaba, the teaching of Sayandaba. So Sayandaba sounds like a weird word, but it means coming from Sindh, means coming from an area in India, Sayandaba. And the story is that a king would use the word Sayandaba, and the word Sayandaba has four meanings. It means water, a horse, a vessel, and what's the fourth meaning? Water, a horse, a vessel. It'll come to me. And so if the king was eating and said Sayandaba, his minister would know, salt. If the king was eating and said Sayandaba, his attendant would know, salt, bring him salt. And if the king was finished eating and said Sayandaba, the attendant should know to bring him a vessel for, and then Sayandaba, water. If the king was about to travel and said Sayandaba, he would bring him a horse. This story often is interpreted or used to mean anybody who's serving as an attendant should be very observant. It's often used this way in Zen centers. It's often used to heighten our attentiveness. It's not that people, the underlying instruction in that context is you shouldn't need to be told explicitly what the next activity is. You should know if they say Sayandaba, you should bring incense or something. That is true. That is one of the ways to use this story. But the origin of this story is a little bit more interesting. It's very old in our tradition. The Buddha tells this story in the Mahaparinirvana Sutra. He gives the story, he tells the story about a king. So the story is older than the Buddha. He describes this king. The Buddha is giving a talk to various people and says, how should you take my teachings? this is what the story is about, how we should take these teachings. And then he gives the example. It's like a king who uses the word Sayandaba. And when he says Sayandaba in this context, salt comes. When he says Sayandaba in that context, horse comes. Sayandaba in this context, water comes. Sayandaba in this case, vessel. And if it's not the right one, it's wrong. The Buddha said, that's how we, people living today, people living then, need to take his teachings. We need to apply them appropriately. We need to, when Buddha's talking about it, when he says, all things are empty and without self, in this context, you should know it means it's being addressed to people who are clinging to it, to a self. In this context, you should know it means people who need to develop a self. He gives many examples of how this teaching is to be applied in a compassionate and wise way. For me, this is just, again, a demonstration of how free we need to be to, be open to these teachings. All of them are based, though, throughout these stories, there are not exactly warnings, little footnotes. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, that's what it feels like. It feels like there's a little footnote says, you go down and says, oh, by the way, if this seems unclear, you really need to study more. Or this one, if this seems like not quite straightforward, you need to study more. So it's still all based on being immersed in a sangha, like we are, and devoted to exposing ourselves to the teachings. If we don't do that, then we're on this sea of many things calling our attention. Many things calling our attention, there's a cat there calling my attention. Dogen Zenji really appreciated always appreciated Joe Shu. He's one of the people that Dogen Zenji would call old Buddha. He didn't call very many people Buddha. He called his teacher old Buddha. He called Joe Shu old Buddha. And right now, that's all I can think of. There might be others. But he liked the story of Joe Shu and the bowls. He tells it slightly differently, though. Oh, yeah. He frees it completely. Oh, this is a different story. This is Dogen Zenji's appreciation of Jiaozhou and Sayandaba. Even more interesting. A monk asked Jiaozhou, how about when the king requested Sayandaba? Jiaozhou bowed with hands folded. Hongzhi commented, he requested salt and he offered him a horse. So in our tradition, that was the appropriate response. He requested salt and he offered him a horse. So the wind of the Buddha's house is blowing, supporting us, filling our sails across this ocean of so much to do, so much to think about, all of you. But it's supporting us and wafting us along. Underneath us, on top of us, behind us, in front of us, totally supporting us all the time. I want to thank you very much for coming to the temple today, virtually or in person. Wish I could see you, but I'll stay here and keep my germs to myself. There's some things not to share all the time. So thank you very much.